STR podcasts are brought to you through the generous support of people just like you. You can support these podcasts by making a gift online at str.org or by phone at 1-800-2-REASON.
The show is Stand to Reason, ladies and gentlemen, and I welcome you to it. Greg Kokel here, your host, and lots of people on the line right now looking forward to talking with you. Usually I start out with some commentary here, and I'm just looking to see if I want to jump into calls or not first. I think I'm just going to go to my callers because there's one right up right now that is going to be, I think, very interesting to everybody. Let me make this point, though, and I forgot to make this last hour. Some things coming up, you already know about these things, but I want to emphasize them. On the 23rd and 24th of this month, the month of October, we will have our second Rethink Conference of the year and our first one ever in Dallas, Texas. It's going to be at the North Dallas Community Bible Church. 2.5 weeks ago, we just came off of our Costa Mesa Rethink here in Southern California. 1,504 people signed up for that, mostly high school kids, and it was fabulous. It was just fabulous. So if you're in the Dallas area, anywhere like within striking distance, you can get on a plane. That's striking distance. You can drive for 8 hours. People did that to Southern California. That's striking distance. Grab members of your youth group. Get your youth leader. Get some parents going. Make a road trip. Go to Dallas. We got 520 people already signed up, and we still got two weeks before the event. 520 people. This is going to be a fabulous event at the North Dallas Community Bible Church. If you go to str.org, get information there. You can also go to, I think, Rethink. Let me just see here. Rethink, is it rethinkapologetics.org? I'll have to get that to you. Yeah, rethinkapologetics.com. Rethinkapologetics.com, and you get all the information about our Dallas, Texas event coming up on the 23rd and the 24th. Plus, I wanted to mention on November 13th through 15th, I'll be at the Bethel Church in Fairbanks, Alaska. That's Bethel Church, Fairbanks, Alaska. You can go to BethelChurchAK.org for information there. That's like way inland, isn't it? That's going to be cold. Fairbanks? No? All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you if you can make it. January's bad, not November. Okay. And I'll be at Cornerstone Church, the Cornerstone School of Theology, Ames, Iowa, on the 19th to the 21st of November. I was with them about 12 years ago, something like that. I had such a fabulous time. We had a big event at the university, invited students out. There were, I think, like 1,800 students that filled the auditorium in a blizzard. And I think I did relativism, and then we did a conference with the church, and I'll be doing, I'm not sure exactly what I'm doing there, 19th to the 21st, if you're at the University of Iowa or Iowa State, whatever, Ames, Iowa, Cornerstone Church and the Cornerstone School of Theology. You can contact cornerstonelife.com for the skinny there. Last thing here before we go to calls, and that is just a reminder about the cruise coming up. August 6th through 13th, next year, 2016. We'll be departing from Seattle. We'll be visiting Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Victoria, all in Alaska, of course. Well, Victoria's in B.C., Canada. We're going to have a great time together. Our speakers, J. Warner Wallace from Cold Case Christianity, John Stonestreet from the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview. I'll be one of the speakers as well. Well, the three of us will be committed to helping you become more effective as an ambassador for Christ. So there'll be plenty of teaching, plenty of fellowship, plenty of beautiful scenery, and plenty of time to enjoy it. You can go to inspirationcruises.com/STR to get all the information there. You can just call them direct, 800-247-1899. People are already signing up with us. This will be our third time as an organization to go. We love this cruise, and you will too. And I just have an idea. I usually don't think about this early, but, you know, Christmas is not that far away. Did I just say Christmas in October? I did. It's even before Auntie Mindy's birthday on the October 31st. Huh. I usually don't like thinking about it until after Auntie Mindy's birthday on October 31st. But I am mentioning it now because you may want to buy your spouse a Christmas present of a Stand to Reason cruise. There's an idea, huh? I'm not going to repeat what the enforcer just said, but related to another hour of radio. But that's a great idea. Put the cruise information in a box, wrap it up, put it under the tree. Voila. Merry Christmas, honey. What could be better? All right, just a thought. All right, good. That's taken care of. Let's talk with you, and I'm going to Arizona here, and it looks like Rochelle. Is that right, or is it Rachel?
It's Rachel.
Oh, Rachel. Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Thank you for calling, Rach.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Okay. So my little sister, I'll give a little back history. When she was a teenager, she thought she was, you know, a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And then tried that for a couple years, and then she thought she was straight, and she got married, had a son. That didn't work out. They got a divorce.
Was it related to her gender confusion, do you think, or was it other things?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. There was a lot of problems with it, but I think that may have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after having her son, I thought that she may be in some postpartum depression, but uh-huh. She said that she wanted to have a sex change at that point. And, you know, everyone in the family talked to her and was like, no, you can't do this. And so she decided she wasn't going to do that. And she became a Mormon, which was very surprising to everybody.
Huh.
And she was like, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, she was very Mormon. And then,
well, she became a Mormon in the midst of still maintaining
right.
the sexual concerns or sexual.
I'm just gonna. She threw them all out the window and was like, "This is what I'm doing now." And then, after being a Mormon for maybe a year or so, decided that now she is a lesbian again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, cut her hair and all this stuff and. And basically, I was talking to her about how that doesn't add up, you know? Like, mm-hmm. how can you be a Mormon and a lesbian? And mm-hmm. Now she actually wants to become a man again and wants to start doing the drug hormone treatment.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, she can't afford it now, but would like to have it do the surgery
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. Sex change.
Yeah, the sex change. So... She's a part of some little off group. It's like a gay trans Mormon group.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently went to a conference in Utah with a bunch of other, you know, gay or mm-hmm. transgendered Mormon people. And
mm-hmm.
So she's not really concerned of sticking by Mormonism. But she thinks that the church will eventually reform and come around to accept gay and transgender people.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is how do I really approach this, and how do I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're in a very difficult spot. I can appreciate that. I a couple of things have been coming to mind while you're talking. I mean, they occur to me, so I'm just going to toss a few things out. Let's talk around them a bit.
Okay.
I'm not sure. First of all, it seems like your sister has, the word that comes to mind is a vacuum. There's a huge vacuum here that needs to be filled. She is deeply aware of something amiss or missing in her life. And I don't mean that there's something wrong with her. We all have something missing in our life because there's something terribly wrong with us. It's called fallenness. And I think it was Augustine who said that, God, you have made us for yourselves, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And so having this restlessness is not itself a bad thing. But some people, it seems, for whatever reason, have a much bigger vacuum, and they're almost flailing about for something to give their lives depth, meaning, and significance. And this is what came to mind when you described the story of your younger sister, because she's back and forth and back and forth with gender confusion. Yeah, maybe I'm a lesbian. No, I'll be straight for a while. Oh, I'll get married. Oh, I'll have a child. Oh, now I'm a lesbian again. I want a sex change operation. Well, I'm not going to do that. I'm gonna get into something else. And this is what, I'm trying to think if I wrote this down here. No, I guess I didn't. But you use the language something like, well, I'm into this now, or something right. to that effect, she said. And it's like she's moving from one enterprise to another in a very inconsistent way. And I think this is what you were getting at one point, the way you expressed it. Well, what are you? You know, what's up with all of this? Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And now she's become a Mormon. And for the life of me, I cannot imagine why she would become a Mormon, given all of the circumstances. People become Mormons because they think Mormonism is true. They pray about it. They have a witness about it. You know, they're brought into this center. It's not for any good reasons about Mormonism. So she becomes, she decides to join a religion that she's hoping is going to reform. So, yeah. But if it reforms, it's like a lot of things, you know, Mormonism reformed isn't really Mormonism anymore. It's something else. Now, that might be a good thing if we're something else. But if a person joins Mormonism because they think it's true, then why would they want them to reform what's true?
Right.
So there's a huge question mark in my own mind about what is driving her emotionally. I have two big concerns. One has to do with the sex change operation. Given that she is so capricious, maybe capricious isn't quite the word because that means rapid change, but the fact that she's in and out and in and out over time with these different things makes me wonder whether she's going to be one of the many people who have a sex change operation and are really unhappy they did that. Now, I know Amy's listening, Amy Hall's listening, and she will post in her post when after this show is posted in her blog at str.org a link to an article where one of the founders of the whole enterprise that began doing a lot of these operations initially, I can't think of his name right now, but she'll have the details, he quit doing them. And he said, the reason I quit doing it is it didn't help anybody. These people that got it were just as unhappy or even more unhappy after they got it, and then they couldn't change. And what we were doing is we were carving up perfectly good bodies. That's basically his approach. So this is something that you might want to talk to your sister about. Everything else aside for the moment, this isn't a spiritual thing so much. I mean, you're not addressing it as that. I think it is ultimately, but you just want to talk to her about, and you're not even trying to talk her out of her gender identity at this point. What you want to tell her, the first thing in this first area, what I would emphasize, let me put it that way, the area of her gender confusion, what I would emphasize is please don't go under the knife. Don't do anything permanent. Because the evidence of your life up till now has been that you haven't had a permanent self-image on this kind of thing. You've been back and forth and back and forth. That isn't to criticize her. It is to point out that nothing is fixed with her. And if she goes under the knife, she's going, you can't undo that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I would discourage that.
Okay.
For her benefit, and this is what you want to communicate. Sweetheart, for your benefit, don't do this. If you want to live transgendered, that's one thing, but don't get the operation.
Right.
Okay, so that's what I have. Any questions about that side of the equation? Okay. I actually don't think that's the most important side of the equation. I think in a certain sense you could even leave that for now and focus on the more important, which is the explicitly spiritual stuff. But my concern is on the other stuff, though, is she may make a mistake and get an operation, and that will just aggravate everything. Most people have – this has not been emotionally satisfying for so many people. They wish they could reverse it. They can't. And this is one of the reasons this particular individual, the doctor I mentioned, quit participating in these kinds of operations. Okay, let's talk about Mormonism. So now she's got a religious conviction. And again, I'm confused, pardon me, because her behaviors seem atypical to me. It isn't like I know a lot of Mormons, but the ones I know are pretty convinced they're right. And so they're not really interested in reforming what they think is right, especially if they're converting to Mormonism. So I would in Columbo style, you could ask her some questions and draw her out. You're going to need more information from her. Why do you want to be a Mormon? Why did you become a Mormon? Not critically. The question isn't asked critically. But I'm curious. I don't understand. I'm trying to make sense of this. Why is it that you became a Mormon? And I see what she says. She might say, I had some friends. They told me about it. It sounded good. I prayed about it, had a burning in the bosom, and I believe that the Book of Mormon is true, and Joseph Smith is a prophet of God, and Mormonism is God's restored Christianity to the world. But if that's the reason she joined, then I have a hard time understanding why she'd want the church to reform about homosexuals, because, gee, this is part of the revealed doctrine, you know? And if they're wrong on that, then how could they? Maybe they're wrong on a whole bunch of other things, too. So I would try to find out why she actually became a Mormon. That would be my first goal here. Well, do you have any idea?
She was raised in a Christian home. And I really think it's like a rebellious thing against my dad. Hmm. When we were younger, we went to a school that was, 90, maybe 95% Mormon. We're in Arizona. And mm-hmm. So there was a lot of Mormons and Mormon families with us growing up. So mm-hmm. we were taught, like, the truth, mm-hmm. the biblical truth about Mormonism and how it's, you know, false religion and all this stuff. So we knew that growing up. But she was always really drawn to the families. And how nice everything is and how they all take care of each other and mm-hmm. kind of that aspect.
Right.
And then I think also in rebellion against my dad, mm-hmm. She, you know, a lot of the whole, I want to cut my hair, and then, you know, the Mormon thing, I don't know.
Huh. Well, that in a certain sense, that wouldn't surprise me. All of these things may be factoring in together for her. And I don't want to psychoanalyze her. That's not my point. But I was thinking this does seem odd why she'd become a Mormon. Now that you've explained things, I can understand what could be the motivation. But it does get down ultimately to the question of whether Mormonism is accurate in its characterization of God and Jesus. And and of course, to me, this is the real issue when you talk to Mormons, ultimately. Who's right? Yeah. Now, ironically, given this conversation, when I flew to Pleasanton, California on Friday last, I was sitting next to a Mormon missionary, and he is just returning from 2 years in the mission field in Brazil, and he'd been traveling for a while, so he's a little bit tired, but the reason we got involved in a discussion is he asked me what I was doing, and I told him I was going to teach at a church and whatever. And he said, "Oh, good. We're both in the same business, or we're both doing the same thing, trying to promote Christ." And I knew he was a Mormon missionary. He had his jacket on, his sport coat, and his badge, and whatever. And I said, "Well, that surprises me because we believe very different things about Jesus." And that was the nature of my whole point in talking with him was that I didn't want him under the delusion that we were both Christians. And either he's a Christian or I'm not, or I'm a Christian or he's not, or maybe neither of us are Christians, but we can't both be Christians. And in fact, I side with Joseph Smith on this particular point. So all of my discussion with him was just on this kind of external point, not about theology proper, but it was more like, look at it, let's just be clear on this. You have a different religious view. And unless they're willing to admit this, it's hard to talk to them about who's right and who's wrong, because he kept saying, well, we're not out to convince anybody, which the guy's coming back from 2 years on the mission field, for goodness sake, and we're not out there to convince anybody. It's just the kind of politically correct things they say, though, that are actually not honest. Ultimately, the question comes down to, was Joseph Smith correct? Does the Mormon Church reflect the truth of the Bible? And so we did have some discussion about some passages, and I don't think I did any good with him, but I was trying to be faithful to the Lord. And for you, Rachel, this is, I think, what it gets down to with your sister, if she's willing to talk about it, and that at some level talking theologically with her. Have you had any conversations like that?
Yes, we've had many, and it always kind of comes down to kind of like what you were experiencing, where she says, well, yeah, we both believe the gospel or something like that, even though I have to, explain we believe in different Jesuses. When I say God, I don't mean
the same one.
Yeah, this is a different God, a different Jesus. This is not the same gospel, but it almost like she doesn't really care so much about that, and she's more focused on our similarities. And not so much the differences. I don't think she really cares about Mormonism all that much, but it's just something that I think maybe one other thing is that since she has been so flip-floppy her whole life, this Mormonism thing, she really, really wants to make sure that it's going to stay
so that she
doesn't look like
unstable.
Trying this, and then this is out the window too.
Yeah, but why? It's so unfortunate if she's deciding now to dig in her heels and stick with a false religion. That's what's really frustrating to me. Well, I don't know if there's a silver bullet here. It sounds to me like you're doing great, that you love your sister, you're hanging in there with her, you're trying to encourage her, trying to be an ambassador to her, for Christ. And deal with the issues that need to be deal with, and she's just not listening. And when push comes to shove, so to speak, there's nothing you could do. You can give your view, you can pray for her, you can ask the Lord to work, and then the ball's in her court. But let me tell you what I told this missionary on this point of we're both basically the same. I said, do you remember in Matthew 18? It turns out he's missionary for 2 years. He really doesn't know his Bible well at all. But he said he had 2 weeks of training. When missionaries get 2 weeks of Bible training, can you believe that? Can you? I asked him how much he studied the Bible, and because they brought up their James passage, about God giving them wisdom, and he brought that up, and I said, what's going on in James chapter 1 there, where that verse occurs? And he said, well, it's about wisdom. I said, no, it's about suffering and trials. But he had no clue, because he had never been introduced, apparently, to the idea of understanding a verse in its context, because they just cherry-pick verses to support their doctrine, don't pay attention to the text at all. In any event, I said, remember that passage there in Matthew 16, when Jesus said, who do men say that I am? Now, why do you think, what did the apostles say? And he didn't know. I said, he said some were John the Baptist, some said they were Jeremiah or one of the other prophets, Isaiah, whatever. And then he says, who do you say that I am? And then he knew the answer to that. He's the Christ, the Son of God. Okay, great, you're right. Now, why does Jesus ask a question like that was my point. He only asks a question like that if the identity of Jesus is really important. If there are right answers to the questions and wrong answers to the questions, and it matters. All these other people, they say you're this, you're that, the other thing, they all got it wrong. Peter got it right. So I use this text to try to help him to see that there are right and wrong answers to the question of who is Jesus. And then I also went to 2 Corinthians, wonder where that is, chapter 6-ish, 7th, 8, somewhere in there, 2 Corinthians, and where he talks about where Paul, maybe I'll find it here, where Paul talks about other Jesuses, other Christs, so to speak, that the Corinthians were going along with, you know, and other false prophets and false apostles. Here it is, 2 Corinthians 11. I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness of your minds, you would be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. For if one comes and preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or you receive a different spirit which you have not received, or a different gospel which you have not accepted, you bear this beautifully. Now he's making the point. He's chastising them. Paul is in 2 Corinthians 11:4 here. But he's identifying there is another Jesus, there is a different spirit, there's a different gospel, and you guys are falling for it. And we haven't preached it, and we didn't send it to you. So this is another passage that I use to help him see that they're just saying you believe in Jesus is not enough. He said, mm-hmm. I think everybody's a Christian who believes in Jesus. I thought of something afterwards, by the way, and these were the verses that I was using to show them that that's not the case, but I did think of something else. Afterwards, do you think, and here you might ask your friend if you get to this point, you might ask your sister, Rachel, if they say anybody who believes in Jesus is a Christian, you can ask them, are Muslims Christian? I think she's going to say no, obviously, but Muslims believe in Jesus. Do you know that the Quran has more about Jesus in it than it does about Muhammad? There is a Jesus in the Quran. There is a Jesus of Islam. They think Jesus was a great prophet. He didn't die on a cross, according to them. He didn't rise from the dead, according to them, but he's there. So they believe in Jesus. So, in fact, my very first radio show, my own radio show back in 1990, I interviewed a guy who is a Muslim, and I could not. He kept saying, we believe in Jesus, we believe in Jesus, we believe in Jesus. And finally, I realized it wasn't the Jesus of the Gospels, it was the Jesus of the Quran. But they believe in Jesus. So does that make them Christians? No, they're Muslims. So that might be a strategy you might pursue with her to help her to realize that not every Jesus is the right Jesus. And that, of course, is what's critical. That is, who is Jesus? The most important question anyone could answer. She believes Jesus was created. We believe he was not created. There's a world of difference between the two. So maybe you can pursue that. Yeah, it's a tough situation. My feel for you, Rachel. My younger brother led me to Christ. Just so you know. I wasn't a Mormon, but I was a mess spiritually. Yeah. My younger brother led my other brother to Christ. He led my two sisters to Christ. Eventually, pretty much our whole family came to Christ. But God used my brother. So no one's beyond reach. Okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Rachel, give me a call in six months if you have any changes. Just bring me up to date, all right?
Okay, I will.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Okay.
Yeah, thanks so much. That was a sweet call. Wow. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more calls after this.
It's hard to keep in mind all the facts and arguments you need to address tough topics. That's why STR has developed a series of quick reference guides on same-sex marriage, abortion, and tactics to help refresh your memory and encourage dialogue. These guides give you concise answers, all on a single 8.5 by 11 inch laminated card. They're a quick and easy way to gain useful knowledge about some of the most important issues facing Christians today. With these tools at your side to guide your thoughts and aid your memory, you'll engage critics with full confidence. You'll be fully equipped to answer objections with grace and clarity. Get your quick reference guides today by visiting the STR store at store.str.org or calling 800-2-REASON.
You can connect with STR on social media to keep up to date on all the latest, including articles, videos, events, and giveaways. You'll easily find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, YouTube, Instagram, and Pinterest. Interact with STR staff, post comments, get involved with other like-minded Christians, Weigh in by responding to some of the issues of the day and see what's going on behind the scenes. Social media is your gateway to all the latest from STR, including speaking events, new podcasts, resources, articles, and what's on our mind today. Follow STR online and find all our social media platforms when you visit str.org. Click Get Connected at the top of the page.
Back at you here on Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel, your host. And we got Tom in Greeley, Colorado. Let me get your button here, Tom. Hey, welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey, Greg. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And my daughter and I were in Orange County at the Rethink conference, and we both enjoyed meeting you. It was a fabulous weekend.
Oh, good. It was a fabulous weekend. I agree with you. I was so thrilled. Did you meet my daughter, too?
I saw your daughter. I didn't get a chance to meet her.
Oh, okay. Well, it was great. I just was almost slack-jawed at the energy of the whole group and the excitement. And when they opened the doors, all the young people charged down the rows to get the front row seats, which I thought was fabulous. So,
All the speakers were just great.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're going to reprise almost everybody. When we're in Dallas, Frank Turk will be there, and Sean McDowell will not be, but all the rest of them will be there. And what did your daughter think of it?
Oh, she thought it was great. We're not generally front row people, so we were kind of back a little bit, but it was. I think we both got something out of all the speakers, and it's kind of one of those things we unpack over time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, great. So what's on your mind today, Tom?
Well,
did you drive from Greeley, Colorado? No, I'm thinking about it.
We flew down just for the weekend, took a long weekend. And,
well, that's great. Okay, so, good.
Anyway, this past Sunday we had a guest pastor at our church visiting from out of state, and he had done a conference the 2 days before and then stayed on to preach Sunday morning. And the conference was on it was called Quiet Waters. It was on a sort of a, in the neighborhood of hearing the voice of God, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, which I've heard you talk about numerous times, and I share your view on that. But, he started out telling a story about, something when he was standing in an airport and just sort of minding his own business, waiting for a flight, and and a guy walked up and stood in front of him, staring up at the television monitors or watching the news or something. And he said that he heard the Holy Spirit tell him that he needed to go pray for this man, that his marriage was in trouble, and that he needed to tell him that God has heard his prayer and his marriage is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the man, actually, he drummed up the courage to go do it, and the man responded positively and actually told him, when I left the house this morning, for the first time in a long time, I prayed to God about my marriage. And so, it was one of those encounters. I'm not sure how to take stories like that when I hear them. But he went on to
by the way, if I can interject here, I think the best policy is just take them at face value and thank God for them. I have no reason to believe that God didn't work that way. I mean, it's an anecdote, whatever. And if it turns out to the good, we can just glorify God for it, because I'm certain God works that way some way, sometimes. The broader issue, and you know about this, is whether this is the standard way God works and whether you need to learn the ability to hear in that fashion. But it would be interesting if this pastor speaker that gave the anecdote, if he was in a position to follow up to see if it all worked out. That's what I would like to find out.
Right. And oftentimes when there's total strangers like that, there is no way to follow up, I guess, unless you exchange contact information.
Well, look, if just think of the scenario. Do you think that the stranger would be willing to give contact information to the pastor who said, the Holy Spirit told me to pray for you and your marriage and it's going to work out? I'd like to get in touch with you to find out if it did.
I would think so.
Yeah, especially if he was praying that morning about his marriage. He said, oh, man, God's answered my prayer. It's all so obvious. I would think he would be willing to do that. But
right.
that would be the question in my mind. Why don't you follow up and see what happened? But we couldn't right. know. So the standard response that I would give is just give God the glory for that circumstance and not go out of my way to try to question it.
Okay. Then he went on to talk about several passages from Luke chapter 9, verses 1 through 10, and a little bit later in that same chapter, and then Luke chapter 10. And basically the point he was making was that Jesus empowered his disciples to go out and proclaim the gospel and perform healing and those sorts of things. And therefore he empowers us to do the same thing, ordinary people. And I've heard it preached more than once that in Luke chapter 9, he empowered the 12 to go out. And then in Luke chapter 10, he empowered 70, I believe it's 70 more.
Yeah,
something
could be,
like that.
Right. And these might be parallel passages, too, to the one you find in Matthew. In Matthew 9, I don't see anything like that. You have a paralytic being healed there. Follows Jesus. But in Matthew 10, I've actually read this chapter many times in the last year or so. There's a lot there for us, and so I'm somewhat familiar with it. But yes, he does send out the disciples on a mission trip, a short-term mission trip.
Mission, yeah.
And he gives very specific instructions to them. And he tells them where to go. Don't go to the Gentiles or to the Samaritans, but to the lost sheep of Israel. Preach, saying the kingdom of God is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you receive, freely give. Don't acquire gold or silver or copper for you. I mean, there's a lot of details here.
I
take this to be a unique commission. I don't see any reason not to. Just because Jesus sent those out to do those things doesn't mean every Christian is sent out in the same way to do the same thing. Because if it were something like that, I think, you know, the other, what about the other details that are very specific, only to the Jews? Don't take money for your journey. Don't even take two coats or two sandals or a staff. For the worker is worthy of his support, and which means, in that case, they were to go out and do the work, and as they're working, others along the way will take care of them. And there it is. Enter the city and inquire who's worthy and stay in their house and give them a greeting and a blessing. So there's all kinds of details here that seem to be very particular and peculiar to that circumstance. So I don't see any reason why verse 8 isn't peculiar to the circumstance. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you receive, freely give.
You said it's not particular to
that? No, I'm saying I think that is a special commission for those people at that time.
Okay.
I am not saying that we can't pray for people's healing or to raise the dead or the other things. I'm saying that to isolate verse 8 and universalize it among Christians is not what the writer intended. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
It is describing a particular circumstance with particular details. There may be lots we can draw from this, but, I mean, if you're going to universalize it, this means then the pastor who told the story, I hope he wasn't asking for an honorarium for his work, because he said freely give. You freely receive, freely give, verse 8.
Right.
I imagine he had at least a carry-on bag.
Yeah, I would think so.
And is yours a Jewish church?
No.
No, well, so he's not praying. So what am I trying to say here? My basic impulse after hearing what you said is that he did not use this passage properly.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Now, it doesn't mean there's nothing in the broader passages that don't apply. I mean, there's a lot about what's going. I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be shrewd as serpents, innocent as doves. Verse 16, beware of men. They will hand you over to the courts and scourge you. But when they hand you over, don't worry about how or what you're to say. It will be given you in that hour. You'll be hated by all because of my name. The one who endures to the end will be saved. I don't see any reason. These strike me as different kinds of statements. than what he says, verse 16 and following, is different than what we see in the, up to verse 15. So, I mean, people can read it for themselves, but I think so.
Okay. Yeah, that was kind of my impulse. Is that, and, it, you know, of course, a lot of people were going on and on about how great the sermon was, and I'm thinking, I'm not sure the passages that he used were really the ones that supported. I'm not sure that those passages meant what he said.
Well, it's too bad. Matthew 10 is a fabulous passage, and there's so much there for us today. It's just too bad that he made this particular point. You know, if it was, here's a question that I have about this, Tom. If Christians kind of uniformly are supposed to be in the ministry, if you will, of healing, casting out demons, raising the dead, why isn't this is that's pretty phenomenal, right? I mean, that, wow. Like, W-O-W, wow. Why is it nothing more said on this matter? Now, we do see in the long ending of Mark a little reference there, but in all the epistles, all these apostles who are so commissioned by Jesus, why don't they don't seem to give the same admonition? Okay, go out and preach the kingdom, healing the sick, raising the dead, cleansing the lepers, casting out demons. They certainly preaching the kingdom, that's there, but not this other stuff.
Right.
So I don't know. It seems to me that would be pretty important, you
well,
know, to
Paul,
remind them of this.
Paul spent a lot of time arguing, if you will, for the faith.
Yes.
I mean, giving lots of good reasons.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, it's interesting. He also used a passage out of 1 Corinthians 2.
This pastor did?
Taught, yes.
And what did he say?
Where Paul talks about demonstrating that, you know, he didn't, I determined to know nothing more among you except Jesus Christ and
right.
He crucified.
Right, right.
And so his point was that the disciples demonstrated the power of God.
Yes. Well, I think
that's supposed to be the same thing.
Yes. Well, I, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what Paul said. You know, Paul, by the way, was an apostle. And later on in his second letter to the Corinthians, he is defending his apostleship by making reference to his works of power.
Right.
So it may not, it strikes me that it is not the sign of the Christian that everyone goes out and does all these works of power all the time. But it is rather the sign of the apostle that does that. And it turns out that, and I have to, you know, I get questioned about 1 Corinthians 2 a lot on this regard because, you know, when I read in the book of Acts what Paul did, by golly, it seems to me that he argued with a lot of people and had a lot of contentful discussions and reasoned with them, you know, as was his custom, sometimes from the scriptures, sometimes not. So it's even in Greece, for goodness sake. So I'm not sure exactly all that's going on here when Paul makes these statements and then people want to take it and reduce it. All you do is speak the simple gospel and you work miracles. Well, Paul did more than that.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure how to understand that. That's a little bit of a conundrum to me.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a reductionist view. It's interesting. I was last night just listening to one of your podcasts from last December, I think it was. And I don't know if you remember, but you talked about the, there was someone called up about the purpose, you know, the purpose of life. And your view was, or what you talked about in that call was not that our view is not, or our purpose is not evangelism. That's not our main purpose. Mm-hmm. Our purpose is to become more like Christ,
mm-hmm.
and we spend a lifetime doing that.
Right, right. And there are a lot of other things subsumed under that, but it isn't right. So I just last question very quickly. Did this speaker spend any time healing any of the sick in the congregation?
No.
Why not?
No, he didn't.
Why not?
Well, that's a good question.
I bet you there was a bunch of people who could have used it.
Yeah.
So, okay, just a thought.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, good talking to you, and I'm glad you had such a good time at Rethink.
All right. Well, thank you, Greg.
All righty. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to our final caller after this. Stay with us.
Do you want to become a more equipped Christian ambassador? One of the best ways to do so is waiting for you now at str.org, and it's free. Just visit the homepage at str.org and click on Subscriptions at the top. From there, you can choose to receive newsletters, updates, and training resources delivered to your inbox for free. You can choose from Greg's Mentoring Letter, Ambassador Insights, Tactics, Solid Ground, STR e-news from Greg, as well as monthly newsletters from Brett and Alan, and more. They are all loaded with practical, concise, useful tools to help you be a better ambassador for Christ. And they're all free and easy to share with friends. So elevate your expertise as a Christian ambassador right now. Visit str.org, click on Subscriptions, and take advantage of what's waiting for you there.
Carry STR with you by downloading our Stand to Reason and Quick Reference apps for free. Both are available for iPhone, iPad, and Android. From your STR app, listen to the weekly podcast, speaker podcasts, check out the STR blog, Access Solid Ground, Greg's Mentoring Letters, and more. The Quick Reference app gives you the tools you need to answer the toughest questions Christians face, all through the easy-to-read text and short videos. You'll have STR resources at your fingertips in a clean layout with great features and functionality. And they're free. So download the apps today and start carrying STR with you everywhere you go.
Final segment here on Stand to Reason and final call with Greg in Pennsylvania. Hello, Greg.
Hello.
It's Greg.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I really appreciate your ministry. I'm a longtime listener, a first-time caller.
Mm-hmm. Glad to have you on board.
Just to kind of set the background for my question, several weeks ago I wrote a letter to the editor of my local Sunday newspaper, and I responded to a series of three opinion pieces in what they call their perspective section.
Mm-hmm.
And those were entitled Planned Parenthood, Abortion, and Family Planning.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, I responded to one of the opinion pieces that was written by a retired physician, and according to the newspaper, he's a longtime supporter of and a volunteer for Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
And his piece was entitled Attack on Nonprofit Planned Parenthood is an Attack on Women. And the doctor vigorously defended Planned Parenthood, while he also promoted that the local Planned Parenthood affiliates did not provide abortions and none of the state affiliates participated in these tissue procurement programs that are so much in the news right now. And in my letter, among some other points, I questioned why the doctor felt the need to defend Planned Parenthood if abortion and tissue procurement were morally benign.
Mm-hmm.
And my letter got published. And
good
then
for you.
Just several days ago, I was really surprised to receive a phone call from my teenage family doctor. And he told me that he was a friend of the doctor who wrote the opinion piece in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And he wondered if the three of us could get together to discuss the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of as an aside, he said more than likely no minds would be changed as a result of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to be meeting with the doctors in about 2 weeks, and I'm studying and reading my way through Scott Klusendorf's book, The Case for Life, and resources from STR. I think I've listened to your precious unborn human persons probably at least five times in the last couple days. I'm feeling a little bit outmanned going up against two doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced the arguments are on our side,
mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering what advice would you have from both maybe a knowledge standpoint and also kind of a strategy perspective?
Sure.
And what kind of line of arguments would you expect from doctors who both support Planned Parenthood?
Okay, so both of these doctors support Planned Parenthood.
As it turns out, I was kind of surprised to find out that my teenage family doctor and he told me that when I talked to him just several days ago that he also was a supporter of Planned Parenthood, which
mm-hmm.
was a bit of a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, a couple of thoughts. First of all, I want to repeat something I said in the earlier hour, and I've said many times before, and it's something you can take to the bank. Insofar as you are understandably a little nervous about going in, which means you respect the opposition, and that's good. If you don't respect the opposition, sometimes you can have your head handed to you, okay? So you respect them. However, what I'm going to repeat is I think you can take to the bank also, and that is very intelligent people make foolish mistakes in thinking when it comes to spiritual things, and that would include spiritual moral kinds of issues like abortion. So because they are doctors, I promise you they do not have a leg up on the information. Because there is nothing that has to do with the medical side of the issue that gives them an edge in the discussion. Nothing, not a single thing. It's just like when Bill Nye did his thing a couple of weeks ago against the pro-lifers, and he comes in as the scientist, and his biggest complaint in that 4 or 5 minute video that you can see on YouTube is that you poor pro-lifers, you just got to get your facts right. But it turns out that virtually nothing that he said had anything to do with scientific fact, and the things that he spoke to regarding science, he got wrong. And that is life. He said life, it doesn't become a human until it attaches to the uterus.
Uh-huh.
Just being fertilized doesn't make you a human. Well, this is just embryologically false. He got his science wrong. And you know, with Scott's material, you can check every single book on. In fact, even, and you might want to Google this just to take a look at it, Robert George's piece in response to Bill Nye. He cites like 5 different embryological texts that all say the same thing. And he challenges Bill Nye. He says, if you could just send me one reference that from anywhere that's medically competent that says otherwise, I'd be glad to see it, but you're not going to find it. So that you can be fully confident in that information, okay? And as far as the pro-life view in general, here's a move that is often made by people like that. They shift from the scientific argument to the philosophic argument, from the question of whether the unborn is a human being to the question of whether the unborn is a human person.
Okay,
and this is where the sled argument comes in.
Mm-hmm.
But science has nothing to say about the second question. That is a moral philosophical question. And in fact, my approach to that is to ask the question, what's the difference?
Okay.
So I would say, first, respect the fact that you have intelligent men that are going to disagree with you. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but don't let that overwhelm you. Take a deep breath and see what they have to say.
Uh-huh.
Okay, chances are you're going to know a lot more about the broader issues than they do. Okay, so that's first thing.
Uh-huh.
Second thing is I would want to steer the discussion away from Planned Parenthood and towards abortion, because your grief of is that right? Grief? Beef. Grievance. Your grievance or your beef or your grief with Planned Parenthood is that they characteristically perform abortions or support the performance of abortions. They contribute to the abortion industry and, in some cases, also traffic in baby body parts.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, if your friends say, but our Planned Parenthood doesn't do that, then you can say, well, then I don't have a complaint with your Planned Parenthood. If they give pregnancy testing and they give help to women, I'm not against that. So you want to distinguish the issues here. Now, generally speaking, look, if you give money to Planned Parenthood, even if your local chapter doesn't do those particular practices, it's going to support the whole thing. But I think you can genuinely say, my beef isn't with Planned Parenthood proper so much as it is with these practices.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to say, how can you be against Planned Parenthood when they're doing these good things? You're against women. is what they said. By the way, even that title, that's demagogic, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so you know you're going to deal with a guy who's a little tricky, all right? So just be aware of that. But I think you could sidestep it by saying, my beef is with abortion and selling baby body parts. So let's talk about that, because I'm not going to disagree with you on care for women. I believe we should have care for women.
Right.
And I believe, you know, I'm not against, are you against contraception, personally?
Am I personally?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so you could say that. I'm not against, planning your family and all that other stuff. But if planning your family means killing your children, that's where I draw the line. So let's talk about that. And so by isolating that issue, you may avoid a bunch of trouble, okay? Mm-hmm. And I would just see what lead they take in the discussion. I just be passive in a sense that meet with them, have lunch, whatever, and just see where they go. And then begin to use your questions judiciously. Ask a lot of questions for clarification. And if they go after you, Planned Parenthood, you could say, do you think that I'm against women? Well, that's what it sounds like. No, I'm not against women. Do you think I'm against birth control? Oh, no, I'm not against that. Do you think I'm against it? No, here's my concern, doctors. My concern is killing unborn children. That's my concern. And selling body parts. And any Planned Parenthood chapter who's not involved in that kind of stuff, I don't have any beef with that.
Uh-huh.
So this is mean to get past a whole bunch of stuff that might be problematic. So
right.
I'm almost out of time here, but first thing, take a deep breath, respect the opposition, but don't be afraid of them. I think you're going to be surprised, especially as educated as you are, some of the foolishness you're going to hear. Secondly, let them take the lead and see where they want to go with it. And at earliest opportunity, make clear that your complaint is not with an organization or all the other things they might do, but with certain practices. And that's where your beef is.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then you could ask if they're in favor of that. Okay, well, now we know where we differ. And try to use questions to maneuver as much as possible.
Keep right.
Your calm. Get clear on things. Oh, no, I don't mean that, doctors. Sorry about the misunderstanding. Here's what I meant. You misunderstand my view. Okay. And if they want to go after pro-lifers, you can tell them, well, you want to beat up on pro-lifers and go after them, fine. But I'm here now, so you have to deal with my view. And so let's talk about my view in this situation and your view. It's you and I. We're the ones who are talking about this. And just see where it goes. If you represent yourself as a gracious, thoughtful person, you might, Greg, be able to put a huge stone in their shoe, okay? And call me back, though. I got to go now, but call me back in a couple of weeks after this and let me know how it went, all right?
All right. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate your input there.
I'm glad you're on the front line, and thank you for writing that letter and doing so well with that. Good for you. All right, friends, that's it. Oh, wow, what a nice way to end this segment. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, just like Greg in Pennsylvania has been doing. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to Stand to Reason. Listen to a new one-hour podcast every Wednesday and Friday. Our podcasts are made possible by friends of this ministry through their generous support. You can support STR by giving a gift online at str.org.